We're here today because a defendant shot Laquan McDonald 16 times when it was completely unnecessary. When the defendant started shooting, Laquan McDonald was walking toward a chain-link fence in a vacant lot, surrounded by 5 squad cars and 10 fully armed and protected Chicago police officers. Jason Van Dyke is charged with first-degree murder and 16 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm and official misconduct, because not a single shot was necessary or justified. So let's start at the beginning, and let's talk about what led up to the defendant shooting Laquan McDonald 16 times. It starts at 9:45 p.m. on October 20th, 2014, with a 911 call about a guy in a truck lot with a knife. And so this map that you're looking at here on the screen, this captures the entire area where this incident occurred. And the 911 call directs 2 Chicago police officers to this location here, 41st and Kildare. There's a truck lot here where individuals can park their trucks. Officers are dispatched to that parking lot at 41st and Kildare. And on arrival, they have a brief conversation with that 911 caller. Officers don't even get out of the car. It's very short. The 911 caller tells the police of this confrontation, about a guy who had a knife and who we will learn is Laquan McDonald. The police get a description of Laquan and are told where Laquan went when he left the truck yard. Important facts here. Police don't even get out. Nobody's injured. No damage to a single truck in the yard. The 2 officers, Officer Gaffney and McGilligan, drive up Kildare and make a right on 40th Street. And almost immediately, they see Laquan walking on the sidewalk down 40th Street. And they approach him. McElligott, front seat passenger, gets out and approaches Laquan on foot. Gaffney stays in the police SUV and travels next to his partner towards Laquan. Pretty quickly, Officer McElligott sees that Laquan McDonald has a knife in his right hand. And so let's just establish this and clear this up right now. Laquan had a knife in his right hand. He had a knife in his right hand at the truck parking lot. He had a knife in his hand when he is first seen by Officer McElligott and Officer Gaffney. This is the knife. There's no dispute that Laquan had this knife. This is it. It's about a 3-inch blade. He held this in his right hand. Officer McElligott walks up to Laquan McDonald, reaches to about 10 to 15 feet to Laquan, right there on 40th. And it's a slow walk, and you're going to get to see exactly how that walk looked. He tells him, drop the knife. Get your hands out of your pocket. Turn around and stop. Laquan ignores him. When McElligott sees that knife in his right hand, he does exactly what he's supposed to do. He shares that information with his partner, Gaffney, in the vehicle, and they communicate that over the Chicago Police Department radio dispatch. You're going to hear the dispatch tape. And when they relay that information to CPD, the CPD dispatcher then relays that information over the radio. And sure enough, they call out for a taser. The CPD dispatcher calls out for any other unit in the area with a taser. And sure enough, another unit, another police unit in that area, in this general police beat, responds that they have a taser. Now, every Chicago police officer that is in this area has access to that radio traffic. And every Chicago police officer on that radio frequency, including the defendants, would have been able to hear that radio conversation between Gaffney and McElligott, the dispatcher, and then the dispatcher's request for another unit with a taser. McElligott continues to walk towards Laquan, telling him to stop, drop the knife, turn around. Laquan ignores him, doesn't run, doesn't turn around and swear or attack or threaten Officer McElligott. He just ignores him. He continues to walk down that sidewalk. Now, portions of this foot pursuit, as I said, are captured on surveillance video. Portions of this entire incident, start to finish, are captured on different types of surveillance video. Let's go back one slide. The incident starts here, it ends here, and as we progress all along this route, the left red line with the dotted line, we're going to get to see bits and pieces of video that was captured from businesses, bits and pieces of video that was captured from dash cam from police vehicles. I also want you to understand right from the beginning that none of this video has sound, but we're going to get to see exactly what happened. So as Officer Gaffney stays in his SUV, Laquan walks on the parking lot with Officer McElligott 10 to 15 feet behind Laquan. They reach this building here. This is the Greater Chicago Food Depository. And the Greater Chicago Food Depository has surveillance cameras on this corner, and they're both facing down towards 40th on the sidewalk, exactly where Laquan, McElligott, and Gaffney are walking. And this is our first opportunity to see on video exactly what happened. What you're seeing here is Laquan McDonald walking on the sidewalk, followed by Officer McElligott, Officer Gaffney in the SUV. Was Officer McElligott following Laquan. In his left hand, McElligott has a flashlight. He's illuminating Laquan. In the SUV, Gaffney is using the spotlight from the windshield, also illuminating Laquan as they walk down the sidewalk. Now, when they reach this next intersection, the intersection of 40th and Karloff, Officer Gaffney from the SUV decides to try to make a maneuver to end the foot pursuit. And as he reaches Karloff, as Officer Gaffney reaches Karloff, he turns his SUV immediately in front of Laquan as Laquan is leaving the sidewalk onto the street of Karloff. When he does that, Laquan has got the knife in his right hand. He hits the front windshield with the knife. Now, nobody's sitting in the car where he hits the windshield because McElligott was sitting there, but he's outside of the squad 10 to 15 feet behind Laquan. So he strikes the windshield, and he pops the front right tire of the police vehicle with the knife. Tire goes flat. The walk continues. Nobody's hurt. Gaffney stays in the car driving the squad. McElligott, still on foot, still within 10 to 15 feet, and feels safe enough to continue to walk behind Laquan McDonald after this. Over the radio, again, they relay that information. He popped our tire. Now, other units are responding to this area. Laquan, McElligott, and Gaffney continue along 40th. And as 40th intersects with Pulaski, there's a Burger King here, and there's a parking lot adjacent to the Burger King. As Laquan, McElligott, and Gaffney reach the Burger King, we have our second video that we get to see exactly what happened here. Laquan is going to cut through the parking lot. And here's the second video we get to see. Now it's quick. It's a dash cam that's coming through the parking lot. And what you can see when you have an opportunity to watch that video again is that McElligott is a little bit farther away from Laquan at this point. But Laquan is cutting through the parking lot, and he is now reaching Pulaski. At this point, there are police vehicles in front of Laquan as he is walking down Pulaski. There are police vehicles alongside Laquan as he's walking down Pulaski. And there are police vehicles behind Laquan as he's walking down Pulaski. Along this entire stretch of Pulaski Road, Pulaski Avenue, is a 6 to 7 foot chain link fence blocking a vacant lot that's under construction. There is a taser unit, a Chicago Police Department taser unit, on its way. And not a single pedestrian anywhere in sight. The defendant's partner pulls up alongside of Laquan. And the defendant tries to get out of his moving squad. His partner says, "Not yet, we're too close." His partner then accelerates around another Chicago police squad, stops his vehicle on Pulaski a little bit further down. The defendant gets out, gun drawn, with Laquan McDonald walking toward that chain link fence and that vacant lot. Now here there's a few important time elements I want you to consider. 12 minutes ago, this started with a 911 call to a truck lot at 41st and Kildare. This defendant gets out of his vehicle. From the moment he gets out of his vehicle, 6 seconds later, he pulls the trigger for the first time and starts to shoot Laquan McDonald. That's fact number two. Number three, 1.6 seconds after the defendant starts to shoot Laquan McDonald, Laquan McDonald is knocked to the ground, never to get up again. That's number three. Next, number four, for the next 12 and a half seconds, the defendant continues to pull the trigger of his gun over and over until he empties the entire clip of the gun. In total, this defendant decides to shoot Laquan McDonald not once, not twice, but 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8, he's only halfway done. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 times in total. 16 gunshots into the defenseless body of Laquan McDonald. All of that occurs right on Pulaski, and it's captured on video. You're going to see it right now. there at the end of that video clip is the defendant's partner walking up to the body of Laquan McDonald and kicking that knife from the ground away. And right before that happened, right before his partner walks up and kicks the knife away, what is the defendant doing? He attempts to reload his gun with 16 more until his partner stops him and says, "We got this." The defendant did all of this. Every single shot. Well, Laquan McDonald was surrounded by 5 squad cars, 10 fully armed and protected Chicago police officers, including himself. Another taser unit from the Chicago Police Department, literally moments away. A chain link fence, 6 to 7 feet tall, protecting this vacant lot, and not a single pedestrian anywhere in sight. During the 6 seconds that Jason Van Dyke was outside of his squad, and he saw Laquan walking with a knife toward that vacant lot on Pulaski, this defendant, he didn't know a thing about any medical condition that Laquan McDonald had. He had absolutely no idea about the autopsy findings that wouldn't come out for weeks and months later that showed there was PCP in the system, in the body of Laquan McDonald. He didn't know a single fact about Laquan McDonald's tragic and troubled childhood. What he did know, what he did see, was a black boy walking down the street on Pulaski towards a chain link fence and having the audacity to ignore the police. You're going to get to see exactly how Laquan McDonald was acting that night and what he was doing, what he was carrying, and most importantly, how the defendant gave that 6 seconds of consideration before he started to shoot Laquan McDonald. Laquan McDonald is not on trial here. His background couldn't possibly have any bearing on the defendant's state of mind when the defendant shot Laquan 16 times. The only information about Laquan that could have impacted his decision to shoot is what he knew and what he saw when he fired those 16 shots. And fortunately for us and for you, everything the defendant knew or heard about the incident and Laquan has been recorded on these videos, these dash cams, the radio traffic, and he knew all of that. The defendant knew all of that when he chose to shoot Laquan 16 times. When I started, I told you, and I'm going to repeat it again here, the police officer has legal right to use force, and even deadly force, but only when it's necessary. What was necessary that night, October 20th, 2014, was the arrest of Laquan McDonald. But it was not necessary to kill Laquan to do so. Ladies and gentlemen, after you have heard all the evidence in this case, you will see that it was not necessary to shoot Laquan McDonald a single time, let alone 5 times or 10 times or 16 or any of those in between, and that he, this defendant, is guilty of first-degree murder. He's guilty of all 16 counts of aggravated battery with firearm. And because he did all of this in his official capacity as a Chicago police officer, he's guilty of official misconduct. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we're just going to take about a 5-minute break or a little bit shorter. All right, court's in recess at this time.
All rise for the jury.
All right.
The court is now in recess, and you heard rather dramatic opening statements from the prosecution. It'll be now the defense's turn to come up next and explain what their arguments are that this was, in fact, a justifiable homicide. As you heard the attorney, Joe McMahon, point out, police officers do have a right to use deadly force, but only when necessary. He began his argument by saying this. This is verbatim from his mouth. We're here today because the defendant shot Laquan McDonald 16 times when it was completely unnecessary. Let me invite Paul Lisnick, who is an attorney. He's also, as you well know, the political analyst for CLTV News and WGN-TV. It was somewhat dramatic, and he brought up race very early on, saying that what this defendant saw was a black boy who had the audacity not to follow police orders.
Well, that's going to be part of the theme that the prosecution is going to be putting out there, Bill. The other thing you heard the prosecution do, it's interesting, we heard some of these related points in those pretrial motions that were coming up, and of course we hear points coming up during the argument. What the prosecution says he was doing it here is, let's put out that stuff we know that's going to hit us that could give jurors pause. Let's put it on the table. For example, he talked about the fact that at the time that Officer Van Dyke shot Laquan McDonald, he didn't know anything about his medical condition. He didn't know what would show later as being PCP present in his system, and then that there'll be, so the jurors now know that was there, that's coming, and that underplays a little bit then when we get that testimony most likely on the defense, which is to say, look, he had all this stuff in his system, and that's why he was acting certain ways. But again, the prosecution has said, how would the lawyer...
They fully admit he had a knife. In fact, they showed the very knife that Laquan was carrying all those years ago. As he walked, he slashed some tires, but he said that that was not a... that nobody was hurt at that point. And that... I mean, they went in great detail as to the final moments, the last 4 minutes of Laquan McDonald's life, where he was, who was there, what he was doing, surrounded by officers, surrounded by police cars, and suddenly...
not surrounded by pedestrians. They noticed there was nobody from the public roaming around. All of that is to make the argument that this is not a situation where the officers can claim, well, there were people in danger, because you heard the prosecutors say all the way through, don't see any pedestrians, nobody else around in this situation, and essentially suggesting cops are trained to handle these situations. They're not here, they're not worried about protecting anybody else.
And no attempt was made to de-escalate, at least on the part of the defendant, the Officer Van Dyke. He got out of his car and he said 6 seconds after Jason Van Dyke got out, he is firing his weapon. Less than 2 seconds later, McDonald falls, and then, and this was somewhat dramatic, Prosecutor McMahon was saying he didn't think it was enough to fire once. He fired a second time, third, fourth, fifth, and he counts it up slowly. He says we're only halfway when he gets to eight.
All the drama.
And yeah, then 9, 10, 11, and over the course of 12 and a half seconds, he kept firing that gun long after the victim was on the ground.
That's right. So there's always going to be drama in these opening and closing arguments. It's really the only time lawyers get to speak directly to jurors during the course of the case. And so this is their opportunity to do that. The other thing you heard the prosecutor doing as he kind of set this up, he said there's a call out for a taser unit on the way. What's that a reference to? Well, as the prosecutor said, look, law officers, police officers get to use lethal force, even deadly force, when they have fear for their life. But you heard, of course, they're paving the way there by saying there were tasers on the way, officers who were trained to use tasers, and Van Dyke knew it, that he had all this information available to him. So a brief closing argument, didn't go on all that long. Opening statement. But those points made, and as you say, after this break, the defense is going to get up, and you know what? For viewers who are watching, they're probably sitting there going, now this guy, he did it, he had no reasons. Well, just sit back, because the defense lawyer is going to create a very different picture of the very same information we've just heard.
And we saw a lot of video, more than I think the public has seen up to this point, of various cameras, other than that main video, which the prosecuting team played in full, where you could see him, it was a little fuzzy at times, but making his way down one street and through a parking lot and then down another.
And you said, by the way, at the beginning of this coverage, Bill, you said, you know, that video is going to be critical here. Well, not only is critical, but we saw it played from different angles, as you just said, a few times during the opening statement. Just so viewers understand, because that tape has been admitted into evidence, the lawyers have the opportunity and the freedom to use that tape as they want as part of the argument.
Okay, that's a very good and important point. All right, well, Paul Lisnick with me. I'm Bill Mahler. We're a part of this continuing coverage that CLTV is having of the technical name of the trial is The People versus Van Dyke. That is the state's argument against Jason Van Dyke, the Chicago police officer. officer who's accused of murdering Laquan McDonald nearly 4 years ago. Let's take a quick break, and when we return, we can expect to hear the defense open its case and outline what its main arguments will be in response to what we just heard from prosecutors in their opening statements.
Are you frustrated by annoying breakouts? Skin that won't clear no matter what you try? Even store-bought acne brands that just haven't worked for you? Now, finally, there's something different, and the results are astonishing. Introducing Proactive MD, a skin-clearing breakthrough that is helping people just like you win their fight against acne.
Thank God for Proactive. I feel like my skin did just like a 180.
My face is not broken out anymore. Proactive MD really works.
Proactive MD is the only system with the prescription-strength retinoid that penetrates deep to stop acne at the cellular level, and it keeps working for 24 hours, so new breakouts don't stand a chance.
We haven't had anything new for mild to moderate acne without a prescription in over 30 years. So the fact that it's finally available for everyone to use is so exciting.
I'm just so confident with who I am right now. And honestly, that's thanks to Proactive MD.
Better hurry, because today, Proactive MD is yours for just $19.95, more than half off. Just call 1-800-917-6508.
Proactive MD definitely works. You can't put a price on clear skin.
Order before this clock runs out, and we'll also include our must-have charcoal pore cleansing brush, a $55 value, free.
The brush is able to get in places that my fingers aren't able to get into.
Okay, back again with the continuing trial of Jason Van Dyke, the Chicago police officer. Paul Lisnick, I'm Bill Mahler. He's our legal analyst. He also is political analyst for CLTV and WGN-TV. Here now is the defense attorney, Dan Herbert, arguing his opening statements.
Back to his first family. Got his kids ready for school. Gave his beautiful wife a kiss goodbye at work. Gave two young daughters a kiss goodbye, go to school. He completed his honey-do list for the day, just like he had done days and days before. Jason Van Dyke reported for his tour of duty, and upon coming out of roll call, he did what he did every day. Him and his partner went to 7-Eleven, had a cup of coffee, and prepared for the night's activities, whatever that may be. What Jason Van Dyke didn't know at that time was that his life was going to change forever. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Dan Herbert. Me and my trial team, Randy Rupert, Tammy Wendt, and Liz Fleming, who is right here, we have the privilege of representing Jason Van Dyke. And I said the privilege. What the evidence is going to show in this case is that Jason Van Dyke is not a murderer. Jason Van Dyke had no intent to go out and kill Laquan McDonald. Jason Van Dyke never knew Laquan McDonald. The evidence is going to show that it was a scared police officer, fearful for his life and others, and he acted within his training. The story in this case is a story written, directed, and orchestrated by one person, Laquan McDonald. Jason Van Dyke was brought into this story. He was brought into this story first off, by Rudy Barillas. Rudy Barillas is a truck driver, lives on the southwest side. He comes home from his tour of duty, driving his truck. He's got his lovely wife in the truck with him. He pulls into his parking lot, which is a secured lot, locked fences, high, about 10 or 11 feet, these fences, some barbed wire in portions of it, It's a secured lot. Rudy Brillis encounters Laquan McDonald. And what the evidence is going to show is that Laquan McDonald is inside the secured lot, and he's inside one of the trucks attempting to steal a radio. So Rudy Brillis, as a concerned citizen, yells out to him, "Hey, get out of there. It's a secured lot." And then Laquan McDonald, and we're going to see this, it's a pattern here. Laquan McDonald was confronted. And when Laquan McDonald gets confronted, he attacks. And that's what he did that night to Rudy Brillis. He just came home from work. Laquan McDonald, when he's confronted by Rudy Brillis and his wife, who's sitting in the truck, thankfully, Laquan McDonald goes over to him and attempts to stab Rudy Brillis. He flies away. He's got his phone in his hand. He's calling 911. He's so scared, he takes his phone and throws it at McDonald. But that doesn't stop McDonald because he's confronted. So what does he do? He attempts to go at him again and stab him. Thankfully, Rudy Brillis then doesn't have a phone with him. He picks up some rocks and throws it at Laquan McDonald. Laquan McDonald takes off. This story, the 24 hours leading up to the final chapter here, directed by Laquan McDonald, shows the story of a out of control individual who didn't care about anyone. Not citizens, not armed police officers, and not himself. The evidence will show that in the 24 hours preceding this, Laquan McDonald was on a wild rampage through the city. We have CTA records. He had a retired disabled veteran's CTA card. We don't know whose it is. We have the card, but not related to Laquan. Well, Laquan uses this card all over, going back and forth from the city. West side, south side, west side, south side. Bizarre. On the west side, at approximately 11:30 at night, on the 19th, Laquan McDonald tries to take a woman's vehicle. She is parking on the west side, and he tells her he needs her car. She is so petrified by this, she calls 911. The police come, and apparently the evidence is going to show the woman said, "I don't want anything to happen to him, just let him go. Please let him go." Well, Laquan then, in that time frame, smokes PCP. And he's high on PCP when he confronts Jason Van Dyke. He spends the entire night, all the way through the morning hours, and then the next day, going from place to place to place, until he wound up at the truck yard. Now, the government wants you to look at just the videotape that we've probably all seen hundreds of times. They want you to look at the final chapter without reading the rest of the book. They want you to go in for the final 2 minutes of a two-hour movie without knowing the context. What we're going to do is we're going to show you the context because it's important in this case. The video, the clip that you saw, the shooting, it doesn't tell the whole story. It doesn't show the desperation and the violent acts of Laquan McDonald, which all led to Jason Van Dyke's decision that he was in fear. When Laquan McDonald fled the truck yard, the police came, because Rudy had called them. Police talked to Rudy. Rudy told him, "Yeah, this guy tried to stab me. He's breaking into trucks." So the police then drive looking for Laquan McDonald. And then they find him. And what do? Hey, stop. Get over here. I'm going to talk to you. What does Laquan do? You're going to hear, the evidence is going to show that Laquan doesn't say a single word to anyone this entire incident. The only thing resembling a word is some growling noises that he made at Rudy Barillas when he was attempting to stab and potentially kill him. Laquan McDonald walks down the street, and they showed you that video clip. And they show you that to try and impel upon you that, well, he wasn't violent. He was just walking down the street. Well, as you'll see, when you look at the full story, the act of somebody just walking down the street slowly is an abnormal act when you have two police officers behind you. First of all, they're telling you to stop. He doesn't do that. He doesn't take off running to get away. He continues to walk slowly with them behind him. It's a bizarre action, and it's important here. The two police officers that confront him near the truck there, Laquan is in an industrial area. So the police officers want to keep him in this industrial area because Laquan, shortly after he sees the police, pulls out his knife. So the police want to keep him contained in this industrial area because a block away is Pulaski Avenue. A block away are two businesses, the Burger King and the Dunkin' Donuts. Their goal is, let's stop this guy. So what do? They drive alongside of him, tell him to stop, tell him to drop the knife, get no reaction from him. They take their squad car, drive up, and turn right in front of him. Laquan was confronted again. And how does Laquan act when he's confronted? With violence. Stabs windshield. You'll see it. The first stab was the tire. He punctures the tire of the squad car. And then he's being blocked from going further east to Pulaski Avenue. They want to block him into the industrial area. He defies that. After he stabs the tire, he goes around the squad car and continues to walk east towards Pulaski. The threat level's going up. So what do the police do? They go after him again and try to block his movement. Another confrontation. How does Laquan react? Stabs windshield. And at this point, Laquan takes off. Now he's running. And this is raising the threat level even more. Because now Laquan is not walking straight towards Pulaski. He has made the conscious decision to run straight at that Burger King, which was less than a block away. Citizen. We don't know who he is. We couldn't find him. But you saw what the citizen is doing. He's pointing. Help. Go get that armed, dangerous criminal. We call the police when we face a situation that we can't handle ourselves. And that's where the police come in. This was a situation that Rudy Barillas couldn't handle. That citizen, he certainly wasn't going near that guy. Why? Because he was an out-of-control criminal running with a knife. So the police, now there's several cars coming. The threat level has increased now. Now we have a man who is obviously out of control running towards a Burger King with people inside, despite the state's characterization that there's nobody around. Oh no, it was crowded. You'll hear. He's running right towards the door with the knife. Jason Van Dyke and his partner Thankfully, they drive up and they block the entrance from the Burger King. They prevent McDonald's from going in there to do whatever it was he was going to go in there and do. But he didn't give up again. Nope. What did he do when they blocked his entrance to Burger King? He went to the next business, which was right across the street, a Dunkin' Donuts, knife in hand. The police recognized this is getting really scary. We need to stop this guy from going and getting into that Dunkin' Donuts to do whatever it is he's going to do. So that's when Jason Van Dyke and his partner pull up and they stop and block the access to Dunkin' Donuts of Laquan McDonald. He's confronted at this point. And what happens to his behavior at this point? He is running away, trying to get to that Dunkin' Donuts as fast as he can. When he is blocked, what does he do? He changes his behavior. Listen. You saw that when that little movement with the right hand? That was flicking the knife out, opening it up, flicking it out. He goes from running towards the Dunkin' Donuts to now a slower pace, and he whips out the knife. Laquan is planning to attack at this point. We know he wasn't just trying to escape at this point. If he wanted to escape, they talked about this chain link fence, 6 foot chain link fence. Laquan McDonald was a 6'2", 17-year-old kid. He could have jumped that fence like that. He's a 50-year-old man, he jumped that fence quickly. He didn't do that. He already jumped a much bigger fence with security measures in place. He could have jumped that. He did it. He did it. He continued to walk. Closed the distance. You're going to hear prosecutors talk a lot about he was walking away from him. The undisputed evidence in this case is going to show that he was closing distance on Jason Van Dyke to the point where he gets within 15 feet of him. There's another clue that comes in right before Jason Van Dyke fired. Laquan McDonald was not looking at anybody, and you're going to hear from the evidence and experts, including even one of the state's experts. When people don't make eye contact, that's a sign that you're dealing with a dangerous person. And then there's another sign. When people suddenly turn and look right at an individual, it's called targeting. And what it is you're preparing to attack, and you are looking at your attacker. Think about it like a horror movie that you've watched. You see the villain walking down the street, not very fearful, but when he stops and he turns and makes eye contact with the victim, then that's when the music starts playing. Well, that's what happened here. The government made a big deal about 16 shots. And they even did that dramatic, slow pause countdown. Well, what the evidence is going to show is that a police officer with average skills can fire his weapon 5 to 6 times in 1 second. Mr. McMahon said it took Laquan McDonald 1.6 seconds till he hit the ground. So at that point, Jason Van Dyke had likely fired approximately 10 shots. And some of your thoughts might be, well, why didn't he stop as soon as he hit the ground? It's a reasonable question. But here's what the evidence is going to show. The evidence is going to show that a police officer involved in a deadly force situation where they have to fire their weapon, there are significant physiological changes that they experience which impacts their decision making. I'm sure all of us have been in some type of stressful situation, but imagine a shooting. It's the most stressful. We're going to have experts talk about it. They're going to talk about from the time an individual recognizes that an individual is down on the ground, it takes up to 1.5 seconds for that to register with the brain. So, Jason Van Dyke fired 14 shots within that time frame of reasonable shots. That's what the evidence is going to show. There are two shots that the government might want you to think that it's, as they did their slow countdown, that's how he was shooting, just shooting at him. That's not what happened. It was pop, 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 pop. Fired his 14 shots, and then there's a pause. He's reassessing. And at this point, you got to realize, and this is what the evidence is going to show, this is an individual not watching it on a movie screen. This is an individual that just had to shoot somebody 14 times. His body is experiencing everything that a police officer would experience. Tunnel vision. Auditory exclusion. He can't hear what's going on because he's focused on the threat. And the threat in this case was Laquan McDonald. Jason Van Dyke had no idea if he even hit Laquan McDonald. You can't see bullets entering somebody. Sure, he fell to the ground. Sure, he can assume that it possibly was because of his gunshots, but he didn't know if they were lethal gunshots. He didn't know if Laquan McDonald had the ability to get back up and attack him. Laquan McDonald holds on to this knife the whole time when he's on the ground, despite being shot 14 times. He starts making movements, which you'll see on the video. And it doesn't look like drastic movements that he's going to get up, but there's a couple problems with video. This video is not from the perspective of my client's view. It'd be great if we had a video from that perspective. We do. We do. We recreated this using exact measurements, drones, and we can show you the angle recreated from Jason Van Dyke's perspective. And then you'll be able to judge a little bit better as to what Jason Van Dyke was feeling. Ladies and gentlemen, if the decision to shoot was lawful, there is no crime. If the decision to shoot was lawful, there is no crime. The government talks about 16 shots, 16 shots. Well, they didn't charge him with excessive force. They didn't charge him with shooting too many times. They charged him with first-degree murder. And you're going to see that when Bob McDonald was shot, the first three shots hit him in the front. And the first or second shot killed him. We know that after the fact. We're going to have evidence of that. But here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. Even if you believe everything the government said, and you believe, well, I wouldn't have shot him, Jason Van Dyke, he wasn't in reasonable fear. Even if you believe that, which I don't think you will at the end of this trial, the shooting is still lawful. Listen. In Illinois, when you'll get this instruction, we have a law in the books that talks about peace officers' use of force in making arrests. Every one of us as citizens has the right to defend ourselves from an attack. Police officers enjoy that right, but they enjoy other rights. The peace officer, unlike citizens, they can't retreat or desist from efforts to make a lawful arrest because of resistance. We know that this was a lawful arrest situation. The government even admitted that in their opening. Next. A peace officer. officer, police officer, is justified in using force likely to cause death or great bodily harm only when he reasonably believes that such force is necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm to himself or another. That's the defense of life portion of it. There's more. Or, you can have that situation, or you can use deadly force here. Peace officer can use deadly force to prevent the arrest from being defeated by resistance or escape, and the person to be arrested has committed or attempted a forcible felony which involves the infliction or threatened infliction of great bodily harm. The evidence is going to show that. They will not be able to dispute it. But there's more. Or the person to be arrested is attempting to escape by use of a deadly weapon.
Which I'm going to object at this point. The instruction requires the inclusion of the word necessary, and it's not in this portion of the presentation.
Thank you. Judge, it's in the overall portion. We're pulling out words from it. So.
All right, we'll include the words that are in it.
Laquan, is he using his knife to aid his escape? Oh, yeah. That's why he flicks it out. That's why nobody's... If he didn't have a knife, police would have just came and grabbed him, jumped on him, put him in handcuffs. They didn't because he was using his knife to aid his escape. Or, the final situation, indicates that he will endanger human life or inflict great bodily harm unless arrested without delay. Those are all, any one of those factors, the shooting is justified. We have all three of them here. Jason Van Dyke had a reason to believe that Laquan McDonald was going to hurt somebody. As a police officer, his job is to serve and protect. That's what's on his police car. His job is to protect the Rudy Barillas of the world, or the next Rudy Barillas that Laquan was likely to encounter. And that's why that law, the Peace Officer Use of Force Statute, that's why it's been on the books for over five decades. Police officers have a duty to protect the public, to protect people from potential harm. And that's what we have here, ladies and gentlemen. You'll hear from several experts. We'll have a use of force expert. His name's Barry Broad. He's from California. He's an individual that testifies for police officers and against police officers. He's right down the middle. He justifies the shooting. We'll have an individual, Barry Broad. Or I'm sorry, we'll talk about Barry. We'll have Nick Pappas. He was the firearms instructor at the training academy. And you're going to hear that Jason Van Dyke's actions, although they may seem strange to us as civilians, that's exactly what they're trained to do. And you'll hear that testimony. You'll hear from Dr. Lawrence Miller, renowned doctor from Florida. And he is going to tell you about the physiological effects that an individual and a police officer go through when they're involved in this deadly force situation. His testimony will be great, but in short, it's what you see on a video when you're not experiencing this that looks like a minor thing is blown up. The threat looks bigger. The knife looks bigger. Everything looks closer. It looks more imminent. And that's important because your job, you can't judge this on what would I have done watching it on a TV screen. You have to judge it, and the judge will give you instructions. You have to judge it on what would a reasonable police officer do in the same situation as Jason Van Dyke, experiencing the same physiological changes to his body that happens to every officer. The government referred to Laquan McDonald as a black boy. Obviously, Jason Van Dyke is white. The government wants you to think that this is a racial issue. Because that's more inflammatory. Race had nothing to do with this. Race had absolutely nothing to do with this. And there will be no evidence whatsoever to suggest that race is a factor. What this is an improper charge. They charged him with first-degree murder. We know what first-degree murder is. We live in this city, in the county. There's over 750 murders a year. We know what first-degree murder is. This is not first-degree murder. But you know who else knows it? The prosecutors. They charged him with first-degree murder and then 18 counts of aggravated battery. Why aggravated battery, if you're charging him with murder? They want you to see that big charge and be inflamed by it. But we need you to focus on the evidence. In closing, we're going to ask that you hold the government to that burden. Remember when you went back there and you were with Judge Gaughan and he told you that the defendant's presumed innocent. The defendant doesn't have to present any evidence. And you can't find him guilty unless the state proves beyond a reasonable doubt that he's guilty. Every criminal defendant that walks into this room in our county, in our country, is entitled to that presumption. Jason Van Dyke is no less entitled to the same presumption. What happened to Laquan McDonald was a tragedy. It's a tragedy, but it's not a murder. And that's what the evidence is going to show. I'm going to ask you at the end of your deliberations or at the end of evidence to look at the evidence, provide Jason Van Dyke the presumption that he's entitled to, and don't allow the state to add another tragic chapter to this story. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, state, call your first witness, please.
The state would call Carlisa Hunter.
So if you pull up to the chair, you'll be able to speak in, and everybody will be able to hear you testify. Okay? Great.
Yes, thank you.
Fantastic. All right. Proceed, Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Judge. Ma'am, would you state your full name, spell your last name for the court reporter, please?
Carlisa Hunter, H-U-N-T-E-R.
Ma'am, could you just move up? Just
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, don't. Thank you.
So all right, go ahead. Thank you, Judge. Big courtroom. Try to keep your voice up as much as you can, okay?
Yes.
What is your relationship to Laquan McDonald?
I am his great aunt.
Ms. Hunter, I'm going to show you a photograph that I've marked as People's Exhibit 37 for identification. Can I approach your aunt?
Sure. Go ahead.
Depicted in that photograph, Ms. Hunter?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
I'm sorry. Who is in that photograph? Who is that a picture of?
Laquan McDonald.
And Laquan was your nephew?
Nephew.
Thank you. I also placed a photograph there that I've marked as People's Exhibit number 117 for identification. I want you just to turn that over in front of you, if you would. This one. Just leave it on the counter there, if you would, please. Who's in the photograph marked People's Exhibit 117 for identification?
Laquan McDonald.
Your Honor, at this time I'd offer People's Exhibit number 37 for identification and People's Exhibit 117 for identification.
Any objections? No. All right, thank you. The identification marks of People's number 37 and People's number 117 will be stricken and moved as evidence.
Judge.
Thank you.
That's all I have at this time.
Any cross-examination?
Ms. Hunter, you said you were Laquan McDonald's great aunt, is that correct?
Yes.
How often would you see him?
I'll let her answer. Go ahead, you can answer.
Mostly every day.
Mostly every day?
Mm-hmm.
So, the date, like October 18th, 2014, did you see him?
No, not that day.
You see him October 19th?
No, not that day.
Did you see him October 17th?
Yes.
What was he doing on October 17th?
At family member's house.
At family member's house?
Yes, other family member's house.
Okay, where did he live on October 17th? Do you know?
He was staying with his uncle.
Where was he living?
With his uncle outside on Perry.
Can you give us an address?
I think it was 6538, something like that. I'm not for sure exactly the address. I know it was on Perry.
Okay, he didn't live with his mother, correct?
No, Jack.
Sustained.
Do you know, so you saw him almost every day. Is that what your testimony is?
Can we have a sidebar here?
Yeah.
Sorry, we need you.
The discussion to continue here. That's Lisa Hunter, who's the great aunt of Laquan McDonald. That was the prosecutor asking some details about where she lived and whether she saw him the day of the killing and how often. What was the question that she asked him at the end? Were you listening?
He asked her, had she seen him that day? How often did they see him? And then we get these objections coming up, and she also asked, at this point, he didn't live with his mother, did he?
And that was overruled. They couldn't ask that question.
And, the judge said stay, can't do it. So right now, we're not quite sure what the issue might be on that, but when the judge said sidebar, essentially what that means is he's calling the lawyers up. The jury cannot hear what they're saying. Judge generally has a little machine he can play that hits white noise so the jurors don't hear what's going on, and he's clearing something up about this. Something I think the judge was concerned, could lead to a series of questions that he may have decided were going to be inappropriate.
Yeah, the idea about the mother is trying to create some sense that he's from a difficult family background, and maybe that would prejudice the jury in terms of his actions.
And there could be a tie again. The prosecution's already admitted he was on PCP for the day, so we know that there may be some issues that this may be tying up. The judge has released them, so whatever the issue is, seems to be resolved.
All right, let's go back to testimony here of Laquan McDonald, Jason Bennett's trial.
Thank you. proceed, Mr. Rubio.
Judge, that objection is sustained.
Thank you very much. Anything else, State?
No.
You can step out. Thank you.
Thank you.
State, call your next witness, please.
All right, State, Tabitha Thierry.
Can I retrieve the two photographs? I think they're on the counter.
Sure, go ahead. Live, the chair is adjustable. Pull your seat up to the microphone so everybody can hear your testimony, okay? And then adjust the mic so you can speak into it. Thank you. Go ahead, State.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ma'am, would you please state your first and last name and spell both for us?
Tabitha Thierry, T-A-B-I-T-H-A-T-H-I-R-Y.
What is your occupation?
Chicago Police Dispatcher.
And how long have you worked as a Chicago police officer dispatcher?
I've been with the OEMC for 15 years.
And what are your duties as a Chicago police dispatcher?
I receive the calls via computer, and I assign the police officers to go to those calls.
And when you receive calls via computer, are these calls recorded in any manner?
Yes.
And how are they recorded?
Audio.
And are they recorded contemporaneously with you receiving these calls?
I believe so.
And the information that you send out over the dispatch, who receives that information?
The police officers on the street.
And are they identified in any manner, the police officers?
By numbers, beat numbers.
Beat numbers? And is that, give us an example of that, please.
811, 812, 813.
And is that how you identify which officers you are communicating with?
Yes.
Now, ma'am, I'd like to direct your attention to October 20th of 2014. Were you working as a Chicago dispatch operator?
Yes.
And at approximately 9:45 in the evening, did you receive a dispatch call? A 911 call, excuse me.
Yes.
And pursuant to receiving that 911 call, did you respond to dispatch officers to a certain location?
Yes.
And can you tell us where you dispatched officers?
I don't recall the address.
Do you recall what side of the city it was on?
Yes.
And what side was that?
It's the southwest side, the 8th district.
And do you recall dispatching what's referred to as 815 Robert that evening?
Correct.
And do you recall who was working 815 Robert?
I do not.
And would 815 Robert be the beat number of the police officer unit that you dispatched?
Yes.
Now, ma'am, you indicated that the dispatch calls are contemporaneously recorded when they come in. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the communication that you are sending out to the various police officers, that's also recorded, is that correct?
Correct.
And again, contemporaneously with you sending out the information, it's recorded what you send out?
Yes.
And then the responses of those beat officers are also recorded?
Yes.
And have you had a chance today to listen to dispatch that you sent out on October 20th, 2014?
Yes.
I'm going to show you, if I may approach the witness.
Can you show you what's in marked as exhibit number 42? Does that reflect the dispatch communication that you listened to this morning?
I wasn't shown that.
Did you listen to a dispatch?
I listened to a dispatch, but it was not shown a CD.
Okay, you were shown it from an electronic
computer.
And did the electronic medium that you were shown, did that reflect accurately the dispatch communication you had with 815 Robert?
Yes.
On October 20th, 2014?
Yes.
Now, I'm also going to show you what's been marked as People's Exhibit number 41.
Have you previously shown it to principal? It's a two-page document that purports to be a partial transcript of your 911 dispatch. Review that for me, please, ma'am. People Exhibit number 41, is that an accurate partial transcript regarding the 911 dispatch communication that you sent out on October 20th, 2014?
I believe so.
Yeah, at this time, we would move to admit People's 41.
Any objections?
No.
All right, identification marks on People's number 41 will be stricken. It will be moved into evidence.
Your Honor, at this time, we would also move to admit what we will identify as the electronic communication regarding the 911 dispatch into evidence.
Lift your microphone up, please. Thank you. Yes. All right, what's causing feedback then?
Your Honor, as I was saying, we would move to admit the electronic dispatch communication into evidence. We would identify as People's Exhibit 42A.
And that's a partial transcript. Any objection?
No.
All right, just one question. Ma'am, was this digitally recorded?
I believe so.
All right, you've been there 15 years. You should know it was digitally, not taped, right?
I don't work where they in the tape review department,
okay.
So I'm not positive.
All right. I'm going to give the jury an instruction first. Ladies and the identification marks on that will be stricken. Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to listen to a digital information recording that has been received in evidence. Please listen very carefully. Each of you are given a transcript of the recording to help you identify speakers and as a guide to listen to the digital information. However, bear in mind that the digital information recording is the evidence, not the transcript. If you hear something different from what appears in a transcript, what you heard is controlling. After the digital information has been played, the transcript will be taken from you. Thank you, State.
May I proceed, Judge?
Please.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, can I have the attorneys over here very quickly? Turn it off right now. You don't have to go.
All right, here are the attorneys then talking to the judge about something that clearly disturbed him the moment he heard the replay of the dispatch recording. A lot of technical things in cases like this. Sometimes it isn't really clear why certain things are pertinent, and that's just the nature of how trials proceed. But this is one of those technical aspects that the judge...
Give the transcripts to my sheriff. Nobody gives the jury anything except my sheriffs. Go ahead, Jess. Thank you. Thank you, Donovan. Transcript, proceed, Doug State.
Thank you, Judge.
Robert. Today, a holding citizen, 4100, killed there by the United Rental, a male who we caught breaking into trucks and stealing radios. He's holding them. Christine Robert asking for a taser from the defender with a knife.
On that recording, that she was that correct?
Correct.
And the information you had was that there was an individual armed with a knife, is that correct?
Correct.
And you called for assistance for 815 Robert, is that correct?
Correct.
And that would be a beat number of officers that you had dispatched to that area, correct?
Correct.
And you also asked if anyone had a taser, is that correct?
Correct.
Sustained.
The officers that were working 815 Robert, did they request that any unit respond with a certain type of instrument?
Yes.
What did these officers that were working 815 Robert request of you?
The definition of objective hearsay was it's on that tape. What's your response, Dave?
Judge, it is on the communication. It's on the tape.
Thank you. Overruled. Go ahead.
They requested help from an officer with a taser.
And when you received that information, did you dispatch or request officers with a taser to respond?
Verbally, yes.
I just have a second, Judge. Were requesting units to respond with a taser, is your information going to all the units in the area?
If she knows, do you know?
To anyone that's monitoring Zone 6 radio.
And did you receive responses from units in the area?
On the tape, eventually, yes, I did.
And is that your job to see who's responding so that you can let the requesting officers know that the response is coming?
I assist them to it, but I don't have to let the requesting officer know that who is coming.
And is that because, does everyone hear your communication who is in that area when you send it out?
If they're on the radio, yes.
So each car has a radio to hear what you're sending out, correct?
They should.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cross-examination.
We have nothing to say.
You can step down and collect the transcripts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
witness?
Yes, Mr. Bateman.
Thank you.
For the court reporter, please.
Detective Jeffrey Malik, that's spelled M-A-L-I-K, star number 20729.
And are you employed by the Chicago Police Department?
Yes.
How long have you been so employed?
23 years.
What's your current assignment?
Detective.
And are you assigned to a particular area?
Area North.
And dragging your attention back to October 20th of 2014, did you have the same assignment on that date?
No, I didn't.
Where were you assigned at that time?
Area Central.
As a detective?
Yes.
Now, directing your attention to October 20th, approximately 10 o'clock in the evening, were you working?
No.
You came in to work the next morning, is that correct, on October 21st, 2014?
Correct.
What time did your shift start?
7 a.m.
And as a detective, do you normally work alone or with a partner?
At that time, I worked alone.
Now, the next morning when you came in on October 21st of 2014, were you given an assignment?
Yes, I was.
And what was your assignment?
I was given a list of places to go that weren't accessible the evening before to try and obtain videotape.
So were those places, businesses in the area?
Yes.
So the next day, on October 21st, 2014, did you go to some businesses in the area?
I did.
Okay. First, I'm going to direct your attention to the Greater Chicago Food Depository. Did you go to that location?
I did.
And as you sit here today, do you recall the address of that location?
No, I do not.
Approximately the area?
I don't. The area of, I believe, 29th Street, maybe 3100.
And off of Pulaski?
Yes.
Okay. And when you went there, were you able to obtain a surveillance video?
Yes.
And were you able to, when you got there, were you able to find three particular cameras for the Chicago Food Bank?
Yes.
And were you able to ascertain how many of those actually had video that was relevant?
I believe one.
And were you able to get a video from that particular business?
Yes.
And prior to coming into court today, did you have occasion to watch People's Exhibit Number 48?
Yes.
And I'm going to show you that particular exhibit. Do you recognize that exhibit?
Yes.
And how do you recognize it?
My initials are on the DVD.
And does this People's 48, does it accurately reflect the video that you received from the Greater Food Depository?
Yes.
Judge, we'd ask that People's 48 for identification be admitted into evidence.
Okay. All right. The identification marks will be stricken on People's number 48 that will be moved into evidence.
And, sir, did you then have the opportunity to go to a business called Focal Point?
Yes.
And at that location, were you able to download a surveillance video?
Yes.
And did you have occasion this morning prior to coming into court to view People's 44?
Yes.
And I'm showing you People's 44 for the record. Do you recognize that?
I do.
And why do you recognize that scene?
My initials on the DVD.
And that was the DVD that you downloaded or had downloaded from Focal Point?
Yes.
And does it accurately depict the video that you downloaded on that morning?
Yes.
Judge, the people would ask that People's Number 44 be admitted.
People's Number 44 will have its identification marks forgiven. We'll be moved into evidence. Thank you.
Greater Food Depository, do you recall there were actually three cameras?
Yes.
And were you able to obtain video from two cameras?
I'm sorry?
Were you able to obtain video from two cameras that showed the same area but just in different directions?
Yes.
Nothing else, Your Honor.
No questions.
Thank you, Detective. You can step down. State, call your next witness.
Judge, people will call Officer McGallagher.
Okay. Can I have the attorneys over here for a second, Mr. Herbert?
All right, once again, the judge is asking that... Once again, the judge is asking that attorneys approach the bench for some conference. That's not going to be something that the jury is going to allow to hear. We're waiting to have the fourth witness. The case has plunged into testimony rather quickly. We had opening statements this morning, and now three witnesses have given testimony, essentially technical things, nothing earth-shattering yet, and now we're waiting for the state, the prosecution's fourth witness, to come forward. Paul Lisnick, a political reporter and lawyer here at CLTV. Pretty routine technical aspects of the case unfolding so far.
Yeah, what it just goes to show is every little piece of this case has to be proven. The next witness taking the stand now.
JOSEPHMCELLIGOTT.
And by whom are you employed, sir?
Chicago Police Department.
How long have you been employed as a Chicago police officer?
17 years.
Directing your attention to October 20th, 2014, were you working as a Chicago police officer?
Yes, I was.
And were you assigned to any particular district on that date?
The 8th District.
What shift were you working and what hours, sir?
The first watch from 2100 to 0600.
And what is that in layman's terms? What time is that,
9
sir?
9 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Starting your shift on October 20th, 2014 at 9 p.m., did you at some time that evening respond to a dispatch call in the 4100 block of Kildare?
Yes.
And can you tell us if you were working with a partner at that time?
Yes, I was.
Who was your partner?
Thomas Gaffney.
And what type of vehicle were you in at that time?
Chevy Tahoe.
And did you have a beat number for your vehicle on October 20th, 2014?
Yes.
What was your beat number?
815 Robert.
And is that an identification number for
yes.
you? Were you the passenger or the driver of the vehicle?
I was the passenger.
When you and your partner, Officer Gaffney, responded to that call, tell us exactly where you went.
Where we went?
Yes.
We went to the 4100 block of Kildare.
And once you got to that area, were you directed to look for a certain individual?
Yes.
And who were you directed to look for?
It was male Hispanic. I'm not sure the age. But it was, he called out holding an offender.
Did you speak to that person who had made the 911 call?
Yes, briefly.
After speaking with the person who had made the 911 call, were you directed to go anywhere?
He pointed north and said he went around the corner.
And tell us exactly where you went when this person pointed north to you.
We turned the corner and approximately, I say 50 feet from the corner, we found the subject he described.
And tell us who you saw when you turned the corner. You later learned that person's name was Laquan McDonald.
Yes.
And can you describe this person?
He was a male, black, younger, had braids, dark skin, black shirt, and blue jeans.
And what was the approximate age of this individual?
I figured he was around 18 to 20.
And when you saw this individual that you later learned was named Laquan McDonald, what exactly did you do at that time, sir?
Can you repeat the question?
When you saw the individual that you later learned his name was Laquan McDonald, what did you do at that time?
I exited the vehicle and told him to show me your hands.
And when you exited the vehicle, were you behind him or in front of him?
He was turned facing inward to the fencing or the bushes. I was to his back, but I was facing him. And then when he turned around.
And you gave him a command to show you his hands?
Yes.
What did Laquan McDonald do?
He took his hands out of his pockets, and in his right hand he had a knife in his hand.
Did he do anything with that knife?
He just held it at that point.
And how close were you when Laquan McDonald pulled his hands out of his pocket and you saw the knife in his hand?
I was probably 15 feet.
And you were to his back, you said, but facing him?
He was facing away from us, so when he turned around, we were face to face.
Did he turn around when you asked him to show you his hands?
Yes.
And is that when you saw the knife?
Yes.
What happened after you saw the knife?
I alerted my partner that he has a knife, and I pulled my weapon.
And did your partner respond or ask for any assistance at that time when you alerted him that Laquan McDonald had a knife?
Yes, he got on the radio, and actually he told me, calm down, relax, I'll get a taser over here. And then he got on the radio and he asked for a taser to come respond to our job.
Now, after your partner had called for a taser, what did you do with respect to Laquan McDonald?
I just kept my distance. I had my flashlight out and I had my gun out on him. Just watched his move.
Now, did Laquan McDonald say anything to you when you saw the knife in his hand?
No.
Did he threaten you with the knife at all?
He held it out. He didn't say anything verbally, no.
The question, officer, is did he threaten you with the knife?
No.
He just had the knife in his hand. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did you continue to follow him?
Yes.
And tell us what route you took when you were following Laquan McDonald.
I walked along 40th Street, eastbound toward Pulaski.
And how far behind or how close were you to Laquan McDonald when you were walking on 40th Street?
I stayed 15 to 20 feet from him.
And what was Laquan McDonald doing as you walked behind him?
He was turning around, he would walk forward, he would walk backward, he would backpedal. He seemed really out of it. He was backpedaling. He just kept walking away from us.
He walked away from you, is that correct?
Yes.
Where is your partner at this time? Is he still in the vehicle?
Yes.
And Is he, where is he in relation to you and Laquan McDonald when you're walking?
He's pretty much right next to me. We're kind of paralleling along the street.
And so you're walking on 40th Street. How far do you walk on 40th Street?
We walked all the way to Karlov.
And what happened when you got to Karlov?
My partner tried to redirect him with the vehicle. He pulled up ahead of him and got in front of him, tried to get him to turn.
And how close are you to Laquan McDonald when your partner tries to redirect him with the vehicle?
I try to stay at least 15 feet if I could.
And during this time, when you're walking behind Laquan McDonald on 40th Street and your partner is trying to redirect him, does Laquan McDonald say anything to you?
No.
Does he turn around and threaten you with the knife?
No.
What occurred, if anything, when your partner tried to redirect Laquan McDonald with the vehicle?
He walked into the vehicle, got blocked, and he spun around, and he swung the knife down and stabbed our tire.
And when Laquan McDonald stabbed your tire, what occurred at that time?
The air went completely out of it.
And how close were you to Laquan McDonald at the time that he stabbed the tire?
About 10, 15 feet.
After Laquan McDonald had stabbed the tire, what, if anything, did you do?
I just stayed alert. My partner then immediately tried to do it again and cut him off.
And tell us specifically what Officer Gaffney did to cut him off.
Because he kind of left the car, so he turned back this way and then went back to try to cut off his path again because he was going to just keep walking.
And what street are you on when this is occurring?
We're on 40th Street.
You're still on 40th?
Yeah, it was like the intersection, the very beginning of the intersection.
And what, if anything, happened when your Officer Gaffney tried to cut off Laquan McDonald a second time?
He swung his knife at the window.
And did anything happen to the window?
The window had a scraping.
A scraping on it?
Yes.
And what side or which window on your vehicle was that?
Passenger windshield.
And was there anyone in the passenger seat at that time?
No, I was out of the vehicle at the time.
So you remained out of the vehicle during this entire time, is that correct?
Yes.
Did Officer Gaffney ever exit his vehicle at that time?
No.
After walking down 40th Street, did you end up on another street at some point?
We ended up at Pulaski.
And when you're walking on 40th Street, are you in the street following Laquan McDonald, or are you on a sidewalk?
We went from the street to the sidewalk, and there was an area where it was just grass. We walked in the grass, but once we got to Karlov, we were on the sidewalk the whole time.
And how far or what distance on the sidewalk did you follow Laquan McDonald?
I tried to remain about 15 feet away.
How long did you follow him on the sidewalk?
All the way to just after Karlov.
And what is that distance that you followed him on the sidewalk, Laquan McDonald?
Probably three blocks.
Three blocks?
Three blocks.
And during that time, Laquan McDonald had the knife in his hand?
Yes.
And was he walking towards you with the knife in his hand or away from you?
He continued to walk away, but kept turning around, displaying it, and then walking away with his back to us.
And when you say turning around, displaying it, what was he doing with the knife?
Like having it just like this, like out at its side.
He had it at his side?
Yeah, at like his sides.
And did you have your weapon drawn during any of the time period that you were following Laquan McDonald?
The entire time.
Did you ever fire your weapon at Laquan McDonald when he had the knife in his hand?
No.
on the sidewalk back and forth between the grassy area. Where, if any, where did you follow Laquan McDonald next?
I was along the sidewalk or the curb. We kind of maneuvered together. He was in the street, I was in the street. When he'd move over, I'd move over too.
Now, during the time when you're following Laquan McDonald on Karlov, were you aware whether or not any other officers were responding to your request for assistance when Officer Gaffney requested a taser?
Yes, we heard over the radio that another car was coming with a taser, but coming from a distance.
And you said you heard over the radio. Can you tell us what type of radio you had? Because you were out of the car, is that correct?
Yeah.
What?
I had just the regular radio strapped to my shoulder.
And the radio you had strapped to your shoulder, did that allow you to hear the dispatch communications of other officers that were responding?
Yes.
And in addition to the dispatch communication, were there sirens that you heard at all?
At the very end, I heard sirens.
And did you ever see vehicles actually respond?
Yes.
To assist you?
Yes.
And do you recall who those officers were that responded?
Officer Joe Walsh, Jason Van Dyke, Daphne Sebastian, Janet Mondragon.
And do you recall how those officers were partnered on October 20th, 2014?
Yes.
Okay. Who was Officer Walsh's partner?
Jason Randa.
Is he in court today?
I don't see him. Yes.
Do you see Officer Van Dyke in court?
Yes.
Can you point to him, tell us where he's seated and what he's wearing?
He's seated to my left wearing a black suit.
May the record reflect. What color tie is he wearing, sir?
The record will indicate that there's been an in-court identification of the accused.
Thank you, Judge. And you named some other officers. You said Officer Mondragon, is that correct?
Yes.
And do you recall who Officer Mondragon's partner was on October 20th, 2014?
Officer Sebastian.
What type of vehicles were Officer Walsh and Officer Mondragon in? Chevy Tahoe. Were there any other officers that you recall responding to assist you and Officer Gaffney?
Afterward, the ones that I saw on scene, it was an afternoon car. I think it was 8:22.
Now, when Officer Walsh and Van Dyke and Officer Sebastian and Mondragon responded to assist you, were you still following Laquan McDonald on foot?
Yes.
And where was Laquan McDonald specifically when you saw these officers arrive to assist you?
He began to run from me just after the whole incident with our car. And then I could see the lights in the windows on the left, and then they came around the corner at 40th and Pulaski.
And what windows were the lights reflecting from? Was there a building?
There's a building with windows up toward the top, small windows.
And were you able to see which way these vehicles went that responded to help you, that being Officer Walsh's vehicle and Officer Mondragon's vehicle?
Yes, they saw me. I was running after Laquan McDonald.
In what area were you when you were running after Laquan McDonald?
I ran from a building just east of Karlov, and then through a couple of trucks that were parked. It's kind of like a truck stop. I ran through there and then through the parking lot of Burger King.
And Laquan McDonald was in front of you? Is that why you ran through those areas?
Yes. As I got to the truck, that's when squad cars got in between us.
And and how far away from Laquan McDonald were you when you were going through the trucks that were parked in that area?
Probably more like 50 feet then.
And when the two vehicles, Officer Walsh's vehicle and Officer Mondragon's vehicle, got in between you and Laquan McDonald, did you see where those vehicles went?
They followed after Laquan.
And what direction was Laquan McDonald heading at that time?
He was still running east, but started going south.
And what street is that he was going south on?
Pulaski.
And what is located down in that area where you saw Laquan McDonald going towards?
Just the Burger King, and then at that time there was some construction areas.
What did you do after Officer Mondragon's vehicle and Officer Walsh's vehicle passed you and got between you and Laquan McDonald?
I stopped at Pulaski because traffic was coming down from I-55 and the lights were changing. And once I got to the light, I stopped to make sure that no cars were going to come past, because there were cars from afternoons. I probably saw 10 cars in the area. So I knew traffic couldn't keep coming, so I was blocking traffic at the light.
And after, did the traffic pass at some point and then you proceed down Pulaski?
The traffic stopped.
What did you do after the traffic had stopped?
I heard gunshots when the traffic was still coming at me, and then when it stopped, and another car came and blocked off the rest of Pulaski. My partner, Tom Gaffney, also used his car to block off some of the street. When I knew that it was all blocked off, then I turned and walked toward the shooting scene.
So where specifically were you when you heard gunshots, sir?
I was in the crosswalk area, like by the light, in the middle of Pulaski.
And how long after Officer Walsh and Van Dyke's vehicle and Mondragon and Sebastian's vehicle passed you did you hear gunshots?
How long after?
Yes, sir.
Maybe 30 seconds, maybe.
Officer, you're going to have to speak up a little bit, okay? Please, thank you.
And can you describe the gunshots that you heard?
Are they continuous?
And how many did you hear?
I heard at least 10.
Did you see anything after hearing the gunshots that you've described?
I walked up to the scene and saw our subject laying on the ground.
And when you say our subject, is that Laquan McDonald?
Yes.
Did you see anyone standing over him at all?
No.
What else did you see other than Laquan McDonald laying on the ground?
Several police cars surrounding him.
Do you recall how many police cars were surrounding Laquan McDonald when you saw him laying on the ground?
Around 4.
Were two of those police cars Officer Mondragon and Officer Walsh's police car?
Yes.
Did you ever, once you saw Laquan McDonald laying on the ground, did you ever go up to Laquan McDonald at all?
I came up to him, but not that close, because he still had the knife in his hand.
Did you see Officer Van Dyke when you saw Laquan McDonald lying on the ground?
Yes.
What was Officer Van Dyke doing, and what did you see?
He was holding his gun, and he looked like in shock.
He was holding his gun towards who?
I think at that point he had it down, like he was not aiming it, but he was holding it in his hand still.
He was still holding his gun when you arrived?
Yes.
And where was Officer Walsh at that time?
He was not too far. He was probably 10 feet from Laquan's body.
Now, Officer McElligott, what was the closest that you got to Laquan McDonald during this period of time that you were following him all the way until the point where he ended up on Pulaski Road?
Probably the closest was when I initially saw him and was walking up to him.
How close would that
have
been?
10 feet.
And when you were that closest, at least 10 feet to Laquan McDonald, did he have the knife in his hand?
Oh, that's when he displayed the knife and I backed off.
And you did. How long did you keep your weapon out? You indicated that you drew your weapon when you saw the knife earlier, correct?
The whole time until I began running.
And during the entire time that you had your weapon out following Laquan McDonald until the time he started running, you did not fire your weapon, is that correct?
No, I didn't.
Why didn't you fire your weapon?
We were trying to buy time to have a taser. He didn't make any direct movement at me. And I felt like my partner was protected, for the most part, inside the vehicle.
Did he keep walking away from you?
Yes.
Did you feel you had the situation under control?
It was kind of like organized chaos. I knew there were cars coming. We were hopeful that a car with a taser was coming, but we were just trying to be patient.
So you were being patient because you knew that your partner, Officer Gaffney, had requested a taser, is that correct?
Yes.
And you believed the taser was appropriate for the situation, is that correct?
Yes. Overruled, I'll allow you wide latitude on cross-examination. You can answer.
Yes, I felt the taser would have been necessary.
Did you know a taser car? Did you know whether or not a taser car was responding to your request?
Yes. Sustained.
Now, Officer McElligott, I could just have a second, Judge. I just need Mr. Weiler's assistance for a second.
She's conferring with one of the other prosecuting attorneys. This is the fourth witness this morning, Joseph McElligott, one of two responding officers. They were the first on the scene to encounter Laquan McDonald. He talked about a lot of the details, where he was, where were you holding your weapon, where was your partner, and basically making the point that they did not feel, or at least he did not feel, that McDonald was an immediate threat, that his partner was safe inside the vehicle, and that they were expecting this taser to arrive. He was asked, why did you not fire the gun when Officer Van Dyke did fire? And those are the points that he made. Paul Lisnick is here again with me. And he's one of the, as I understand, one of three officers who've been charged with covering up this shooting, a case that has yet to go to trial.
Well, that's right, because the initial reports issued by a lot of these cops sort of took Van Dyke's position in it, and then they changed. The defense will be going after those folks in terms of the modifications of their report to show they can't be trusted. But what's building here is the fact that the the prosecutor is obviously showing that a reasonable person would not have shot.
Let's go back to the testimony.
The area where you indicated you followed Laquan McDonald?
Yes.
If I could just...
remind you that CLTV, if you're just tuning in today, is carrying the Jason Van Dyke murder trial in its entirety, that is gavel to gavel, no matter how long it takes, 2, possibly 3 weeks. And we began today with several decisions by the judge, and then the opening statements by the defense and the prosecution. And now we've had 4 witnesses. The judge does not want to delay things. He plunged right in, and we've had 4 witnesses now. The 4th witness still on the stand. This is the officer Joseph McGillicott, one of the 2 first responding officers to the scene. Let's see if testimony is now resuming again. Apparently not. But this is all part of the building of a case for the prosecution to get every detail on the record. She asked the officer to point out and describe the defendant, Jason Van Dyke. You would think, why is that necessary? But it's, again, important that all these details be put into the record.
Yourself, sir?
Yes.
And the person you're walking behind is who?
Laquan McDonald.
And the vehicle to your left is who?
My partner, Thomas Gaffney.
And again, what street are you following Laquan McDonald on at this time?
40th Street.
And what pace would you say you were following him at?
Like a brisk walk.
I just need Mr. Weiler to help me get to the next court judge, if he could.
Jury, if you want to stand up a little bit while we're waiting, so if you don't want to, that's fine too.
Just
do it. Okay. All right, there we go.
Thank you, Judge. Sir, you indicated earlier that Laquan McDonald at some point had stabbed your tire, is that correct?
Yes.
Can I show you, if I may, Judge, what's marked as People's Exhibit Number 82? That's not fair.
Whenever you get out there, I just kind of was wondering after she's looked, there's 28 looking.
showing you what's marked as People's Exhibit Number 82. Do you recognize what that's a picture of, sir?
Yes.
And what does People's Exhibit 82 show?
It's our squad car tire.
And can you point to the area where you say Laquan McDonald stabbed your tire?
Yes, it's right there.
Does People's Exhibit 82 accurately reflect how your tire appeared after Laquan McDonald had stabbed the tire?
Yes.
Showing you now what's been marked as People's Exhibit Number 83. Again, is this another view of your tire?
Yes.
And other than the tape measure being placed on the tire, does this accurately reflect your tire on your vehicle after Laquan McDonald stabbed the tire?
Yes.
Showing you now has been marked as People's Exhibit Number 84. Do you recognize what's depicted here?
Yes.
And what is depicted in People's Exhibit 84?
I'd say you can take that marking off. There you go.
Thank you, Judge. What is depicted in People's 84?
The scrape on our window.
And is that the scrape you described that Laquan McDonald did with the knife?
Yes.
Does People's Exhibit 84 accurately reflect the scratch on your windshield after Laquan McDonald hit it with the knife?
Yes.
Now I'm going to show you People's Exhibit Number 85. Again, other than the tape measure, does People's 85 accurately reflect the windshield of your vehicle after Laquan McDonald stabbed it or struck it with the knife?
Yes, it does.
Sir, you indicated that during your contact with Laquan McDonald that Officer Gaffney had made a request. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
You indicated during your contact with Laquan McDonald that evening, Officer Gaffney initially made a request for assistance. Is that correct?
Yes.
How long after Officer Gaffney made the request for assistance did vehicles respond to assist you?
It was a while. 5 minutes, maybe? Just a guess.
When any of the vehicles were responding to assist you, did you observe any vehicles make maneuvers such as U-turns?
Yes.
And do you know which vehicle made a U-turn?
822 Afternoons.
And do you know whose vehicle that was?
It's Officer Velez and I can't recall it, the other officer.
Oh, so you're going to have to speak up, all right?
Okay.
It's hard to hear your testimony. Pull your chair up a little bit to the microphone. And speak up. Go ahead, stay.
Do you recall which vehicle made a U-turn in front of you after you had called for assistance?
822.
And you said that was Officer Velez?
Velez and I can't recall. Becerra, maybe?
Did you observe any vehicles cross any mediums or curbs when they were responding to assist you?
No. Oh, actually, yes. After Laquan had gotten away from me, 845 Robert was behind them, and they went over the curb at Burger King.
And, again, who was in 845 Robert?
Officer Walsh and Officer Van Dyke.
When 845 Robert went over the curb, was there a vehicle following 845 Robert?
813 Robert. I think they turned around. My partner went, also went into the parking lot, but went around the other side.
So at that point, there were three vehicles that you knew were on scene, correct?
Yes.
And that's including your vehicle. Is that correct?
Three in the beginning, and then I saw more once we came out onto Pulaski.
And you indicated earlier that you had a weapon. Was Officer Gaffney also armed at that time?
Yes.
Officer McElligott, at any time when Officer Gaffney tried to cut off Laquan McDonald, did you observe him stumble or anything?
Stumble?
Yes.
Yes, he appeared to be
injured. I can't hear the question, all right? You're going to have to speak up.
I'm sorry.
All right?
The question...
Go ahead.
May I inquire, Your Honor?
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. When Officer Gaffney, as you described, attempted to cut Laquan McDonald off with the vehicle, did you at any time observe Laquan McDonald stumble in any way?
It was when he met with the vehicle, he stumbled and spun, and that's when he swung the knife at the tire.
So that was the first time that Officer Gaffney attempted to cut him off, correct?
Yes.
Were you able to see his face at that time? Laquan McDonald's face.
I don't recall.
And prior to the other vehicles arriving to assist you, did Laquan McDonald run from you, or was he walking?
He walked and then he ran at the end.
At what point, tell us at what point Laquan McDonald started to run from you?
Just after he walked away from the vehicle, after he struck the tire and the window.
And when you say he ran, was this a full...
State, you're getting a little repetitive right now. Move on. All right,
yes,
that's an evidence already.
Okay, thank you, Judge. Judge, if I could just have a second, please.
Sure.
Initially responded to the 4000 block of Kildare, and you said you were directed to a certain location by an individual. Is that correct? Do you recall that?
Yes.
Did you notice whether or not that individual was injured in any way?
No.
Your Honor, at this time, we would move to admit... People's Exhibits 81, 82, 83, and 84.
Any objections?
No.
All right, the identification marks will be stricken. They will be moved into evidence.
Thank you, Judge. I have no further questions at this time, Your Honor.
Cross-examination.
Good afternoon, officer.
Good afternoon.
So, he stabs the tire, right?
Yes.
He tries to stab the windshield, correct?
Yes.
Then he takes off running, right?
Yes.
Now, he has clearly raised the threat level, has he not, by stabbing his tire?
Officer, you understand the question?
Yes, sir.
All right, answer it then. Overrule. Go ahead.
By stabbing the tire, stabbing the windshield, he's clearly raised the threat level, has he not?
Yes, he has.
And he takes off running, right?
Yes.
And he's running toward the Burger King parking lot, right?
Yes.
And there are trucks parked there, correct?
Yes.
There are people parked. There are people parked their cars there, right?
Yes.
You can't shoot at him as he's running toward that Burger King parking lot, can you?
Objection.
You understand that question, officer?
Yes, I do.
All right. Overruled. You're going to answer.
Yeah, it wouldn't be smart.
It wouldn't be smart at all, would it? There are people there, correct?
Yes.
There are vehicles there, correct?
Yes.
And that's where he's running to. True?
True.
Now, when you first arrived at that lot, that truck lot, you talked to someone, right?
At the very beginning, yes.
And they described the person that they were looking, that you were looking for, true?
Yes.
And they told you that you were told that that person had threatened them with a knife, right?
We were told that he was stealing from the truck yard.
Okay. And so you drove around and you saw someone who matched that description. Or at least you thought matched the description, right?
Yes.
And you got out of the car, true?
True.
And how soon after you got out of the car did he flip open that knife?
Within seconds.
Within seconds. That raised the threat level, did it not?
Yes.
Now you're dealing with a person who's flipped out a knife with you within, what, 10 feet away from him?
Yes.
So you pull your gun, right?
Yes.
You tell him to drop the knife, I assume, right?
Yes.
How many times did you tell him to drop that knife?
Probably 30.
And he never responded at all, did he?
No.
He just kept walking away from you, true?
True.
You weren't going to shoot him in the back, were you?
No.
And in fact, you thought you and your partner could corral him before he got to the Burger King, true?
True.
That's what you were trying to do, isn't it?
Yes.
So you followed him from 10 to 15 feet away with your gun drawn. He had his knife out, right?
Yes.
Your partner was trailing him with in the car, true?
Yes.
And your partner was going to try to cut him off from the Burger King, right?
Yes.
And that's, in fact, what he did when he pulled into that intersection at 40th and whatever that street was, right?
Yes.
And that was a block away from the Burger King, true?
It was less than a block.
Less than a block away. And that's when he attacked your tire, right?
Yes.
And he attacked the windshield, right?
Yes.
And then he took off running. True?
True.
You couldn't catch him, could you?
No.
And you had heard, I think, over the radio, or I think you testified, you may have heard somebody might have been coming with a taser?
Yes.
You don't know where that person was coming from, right?
I didn't know, no.
And you didn't know how long it would take to get there, correct?
Correct.
And you guys didn't have a taser, true?
True.
So you were trying to cut him off from going to that Burger King, right?
Yes.
Is that the first time anybody's attacked the squad car you were driving in?
Objection, Robert.
Sustained.
Now, as you were following him for what, 2-3 blocks?
Yes.
He never turned toward you, right?
He never walked toward me. He turned toward me, but didn't walk toward me.
Okay, and you tried to stay 10 to 15 feet away from him, true?
True.
Had he turned and walked toward you, that would be a different situation, would it not?
Objection. Overrules,
you can allow your white latitude on redirect.
Can you repeat, please?
Sure. If he had turned and started walking toward you, that would change the situation completely, would it not?
Yes.
That never happened, right?
No.
To say anything here, the prosecuting attorney is just going to have a quick final cross-examination with the
defense. Sir, you interacted with Laquan McDonald for several minutes, is that correct?
Yes.
And even though you had your weapon drawn, you never fired at him, is that correct?
That's correct.
And he never went into the Burger King, did he?
No.
And you didn't fire your weapon because he never threatened you, isn't that true? With the knife.
He never went toward me, so no, I didn't.
The question is, you never fired your gun because he never threatened you with the knife, did he?
Objection. I'll let the officer answer. Go ahead.
Correct.
I didn't hear your answer, officer.
Correct.
And that was the situation of your encounter with Laquan McDonald. Wasn't that true?
Yes.
Nothing else, Judge.
Thank you.
That situation changed dramatically when he attacked that squad car, did it not?
It did change my awareness.
Sure, and then he started running away, correct?
Yes.
Toward the Burger King parking lot, right?
Yes.
And you couldn't possibly fire your weapon into that Burger King parking lot, could you?
No.
And he ran away from you. He was faster than you are, I assume, right?
Yes, he was.
Anything else?
No.
Thank you. You can step down, officer.
All right, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to break for lunch right now. Jess, could you take our wonderful people back to the jury room?
All right, for the jury.